Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Hear it from the doctor with expert guests from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's Healthy Children. Now, our favorite mom, Melanie Cole, MS.
Is a teenage brain just an adult brain with fewer miles on it? As it turns out, the studies are more and more showing that no, that is not the case. My guest, Dr. Andrew Garner from the AAP Committee on Psychosocial Aspects of Child and Family Health, is here to tell us about why the teenage brain is so much different than our own. So, Dr. Garner, what makes teenagers the little aliens that they seem to be during those years?
We've learned a lot about the adolescent brain recently because of the use of these non-invasive imaging techniques, things like MRIs, which allow us to look at individuals and then follow them over time. And the take-home message is that different parts of the brain appear to develop at different rates and at different times. So that's the most important thing. It has several important implications. First, it sort of correlates nicely with what we understand about child development in the sense that the regions that sort of come online first are the ones you see first. So, for example, when you're born, essential functions like being able to breathe and swallow, the parts of the brain that seem to control those seem to be pretty mature at birth, like you'd expect. But then the next areas that seem to mature are the areas that are responsible for things like motor control and visual control. So that's what you see with newborns. And then the next thing is the integration of those things. So when children start to crawl and furniture walk and that sort of thing. But the take-home message here is that there are two important parts of the brain you want to consider. The first is an area called the limbic system, and this is some very old structures that are deep in our brain, and they try and keep us safe when we're young. So two important structures there. The first is the hippocampus, which is short-term memory, and then there's a place called the amygdala, and that's what we've talked about in the past. The amygdala is the home of the fight-or-flight response, right? So this is the part of the brain that responds almost reflexively to keep you safe, and it all sort of says, just do it, just do it. And so it sort of makes evolutionary sense for these systems to come on soon to try and keep us early and safe. The problem is that the limbic system, the amygdala, developed long before the prefrontal cortex develops. And this is the sort of in the front part of your brain there. And some people have called the prefrontal cortex the seat of civilization, right? It's sort of what makes us human. It allows us to be social, to be adaptive, to sort of think abstractly. So psychologists will refer to this as formal operations, and neurologists will call us executive function. And the problem is that it inhibits the amygdala. So as opposed to the amygdala saying, just do it, the prefrontal cortex is saying, think about it. The problem is with these MRIs we've done, it's apparent now that the prefrontal cortex isn't completely mature until the mid-20s. So what we have going through childhood and then continuing in through adolescence is sort of an imbalance in the voices, if you will, inside the brain. The amygdala is screaming, just do it, while the prefrontal cortex is only able to whisper, let's think about it, until you get into the mid-20s.
And the teenager certainly takes unnecessary risks. Yeah. And is this a good idea doesn't necessarily come into it. What is the consequence of this doesn't necessarily come into it. It's, you know, hey, I'm going to do this, or I'm going...
That's it. So there are three main important implications, I think, of this new research on the adolescent brain. The first is just what you're saying. Adolescents can make great decisions when they're calm, cool, and collected, right? So it's not that the prefrontal cortex is non-functional in adolescents. The problem is that the prefrontal cortex is only whispering, right? So if everything else is quiet, we're in good shape. But if there's a hint of emotion or stress or distraction, adolescents are more likely to listen to that screaming amygdala and to do something impulsively. So a good example I talk about in the clinic a lot of times is when you talk about adolescents and getting in a car with friends that are drunk. And if you do that on any given day, it's almost insulting to them. They're like, are you kidding me? There's no way I would ever get in a car with one of my friends if they were drunk. There's just no way it would happen, because that's the prefrontal cortex talking when the amygdala is silent. But when in the middle of the rush, you know, the friends call and they say, hey, I'm going to pick you up, we're going to go see a movie, kid goes out, opens the car door, and he gets a whiff of alcohol, but he's like, oh, you know, they're waiting for me, I'm not sure I really smelled it, maybe it's not a big deal, I don't want to make a kerfuffle with my friends, I'll just go with it, right? So I think that's a good example of where, you know, when things are calm, cool, and collected, they can make great decisions, but when there's a hint of stress, not so much. And that's sort of the the reasoning behind having sort of graduated or graded driver's licenses, that young drivers need assistance in sort of learning new skills one at a time.
And also why they sometimes fold under peer pressure after repeatedly saying they're not going to.
Right, right. So that's the first thing, is they can make good decisions, but when emotions evolve, that we have some problems. The second thing that I would take home is that the prefrontal cortex is really inhibited by substance abuse, in particular alcohol. So this is particularly scary because the prefrontal cortex is the part that sees the consequences and predicts similar consequences for future use. So if we're inhibiting that amygdala, you consider if the prefrontal cortex is trying to inhibit that just do it thing, you may never develop the ability to put the brake on that. So we have sort of a vicious cycle here where an immature prefrontal cortex is unable to prevent the amygdala screaming, just try it, just try it, just try it. But then the alcohol injection in turn inhibits the maturation of prefrontal cortex, so you may never get to the point. And that sort of explains why the longer kids wait to even try alcohol, the less likely they are to abuse alcohol. So it's really important to try and put that off as long as we can.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. So you said there was three.
Yes, the third one. Children and adolescents are particularly sensitive to significant adversity and stress for several reasons. That amygdala, that trigger in flight or flight response, is mature long before the safety or the off switch matures, the prefrontal cortex. And the developing brain's plasticity is also an issue. The brain is like a muscle, so the parts that you use get stronger over time. So the differential maturation of the brain and the plasticity make it much harder for children and adolescents to turn off the stress response. So again, we have a vicious cycle here where adversity starts the stress response. The differential maturation of the brain makes it harder for them to turn it off, and the plasticity ensures that those activated anxiety circuits get stronger over time.
So now, Dr. Garner, put this together for the parents into a way that they can approach the situation, whatever it may be, in a way that will not turn off the situation and create that stress and adversity.
Yeah, I think it's really hard. I think we need to remember that adolescents literally can see the world differently than we do. They process our facial features even differently. So while we may be surprised, they may see anger or being upset. And so as hard as it is, we got to stay calm. We got to stay calm, cool, and collected, because when we start getting emotional, their amygdala kicks in and they're not learning as well as they could.
Well, you know, I've even noticed my 12-year-old son, I'll say, have you done your homework? And he'll say, you're mad at me.
Right.
I'm like, I'm not mad at you. I just asked you if you did your homework.
Well, that's it. And so that's the thing, is that, you know, they've done studies, again, using these MRIs, where if they show a face to an adult that shows shock, they'll process it through parts of the brain and they'll say, oh, that person's shocked. And if they show the same picture to an adolescent, they process it through the amygdala and they say they're angry at me. So the question is, how often do our adolescents shock us? Pretty much every day.
Pretty much.
Automatically, our shock is being interpreted by them that we're mad at them. You can see how the conversation's already gotten off the tracks.
In 30 seconds, wrap it up for us. Give us your best advice.
Yeah, I think we have to remember that child and adolescence is a stressful time. And I don't think we tend to think of it as being stressful because they don't have to worry about taxes. They don't have to worry about this. You know, how complicated is their life? It is a very stressful time. And so we want to do our best to try and make it less stressful by building up skills and making sure that they know that we're behind them and support them. That doesn't mean we're permissive. We want to try and be as positive and as less emotional as we can be.
That is certainly easier said than done, but it is great advice. Remember, you can listen anytime on demand or on the go at radiomd.com. This is Melanie Cole for Radio MD. Stay well.